They were sitting around the fire telling stories of iron, eels, horse races and slaves.
Bullets come every year, or I don't know, it's seasonal or something. The dogs are not worried about them. They don't seem to be worried about the dogs. But on this one occasion, well, it happened very often, but when I saw it, all the bullocks were at the top end of the field in a group eating away. And this lady came in the bottom gate with this dog. And as soon as the bullock saw the dog and the dog saw the bullock, they both set off. They met in the middle of the field and they formed a friendship. And they were just hanging around together, and the dog was walking around, the bullock was walking around, and not much they could do, but it's strange, but these two different animals had formed a friendship and they were so pleased to see one another. It was something to watch, you know.
Just reminded me when you're saying you imagine sort of big rabbits on the lawn, when you think of rabbit lawn, that for some reason parked opposite my house there was a huge red rabbit. I don't know where it's come from, and it was massive, and it was just on a trailer opposite our house for weeks. It was absolutely massive, like something you'd have in a, I don't know, in a fairground or something. It was well strange. So yes, now I've got that image of that grazing the rabbit lawn.
Tell you about this old cottage here. In the early 60s, an elderly lady called Mrs. Brooks lived here, and she had no electricity at all, and it was all lit with paraffin lamps in the windows and everything. It looked quite fantastic. And inside she had a huge range that she cooked on, and it was completely powered by paraffin. And when you went in, the smell of paraffin was absolutely amazing. And when she died, and a friend of mine cleared the contents, and there was a lovely Georgian pine dresser, and I bought it for £10 in those days, and I sold it to my brother, and he's still got it in his kitchen. It's amazing, really.
The older fishermen were like farmers. They know how they're crops grow, yeah, as it were, and where they are and what to leave alone. And unfortunately, a lot of the younger fishermen, they don't study the job. They think it's just a matter of getting in a boat and chucking out some nets, and it's not at all. Dover soles, they dump Dover soles at the mouth of this bay, tons at a time, because they're over quota. They've brought them up in the nets, so they could chuck them. They have to chuck them back. It's crazy that people don't know this. They have their quota. Well, they put their nets out. You can't sort of say, "Oi, little fisher, I don't want your type. I want your type." You bring the nets up. I mean. And so it's been since time immemorial, nets and even long lining. You never know what's going to get on the hook, do you? It's up to the skipper or the trawlerman to know his trade. Mm-hmm. As I say, like a farmer would know his fields, when to leave things fallow, and when it is time. Yes, or that, or they won't be fully sized yet, they won't have bred yet, so we'll leave that alone.
Okay, yeah. We fly underwater, we have wonderful, wonderful little stiff wings, and we can go down 60 odd metres. And we're catching sprats and sand eels and sometimes little small herring and things like this. I like to say it's like flying. We fly through the air, but very low across the sea, to get out into the deeper waters. But also we have this fantastic ability to fly underwater, and it's ever so exhilarating. because you can actually beat fast and zip through the water, and then you can actually kind of stop the wing beat and glide for a fraction and then start all over again. And it's a brilliant feeling. But the thing that really worries us and does cause problems are human beings. It's the behaviour of human beings. It's the behaviour of what they do with coming in a boat to see us and disturbing us. And we've got really, it's a bit panicky because of the what they shout and they yell and everything. And quite often what does happen is some eggs are knocked into the water, some chicks fall off. But over and above that, man has these huge vessels that seem to come in off Berry Head, the big tankers and the container vessels and things like this. And some behave irresponsibly by discarding and washing their tanks, and there's oil and things like this. Well, we can't afford to get oiled. If once we get oiled, then we're into major problems. Our buoyancy goes. Unfortunately, we try and preen it off and we ingest it. And it's so abrasive, it's so aggressive within our systems. And unfortunately, many of us do actually die.
So we caught the high tide coming in. Usually an hour before or after, it's usually pretty good. But as I say, for me, it's gone quiet. But the boats down there are using spinnakers. They're pulling them in about four to five at a time. Mackerels, they're after mackerels, well, yeah. It should work, but they ain't working. We do, because we bring up our cup of tea and sandwiches and on a cook of any sausages, and we make a day of it, you know. It was going to be a good day. You watch that bloke in the green in a minute, and he'll been up about three or four. Because he's using a spinnaker. It's like a little plate with a nook on it, and it spins through the water. As it spins through, the mackerel jumps through it. But what I got now, I just put on some new feathers, and I can't get nothing. Wait. Here, madam, your job.
You haven't.
Yeah.
You've got one.
Got more than one.
Keep still a moment. I'm still wet. You got his tail as well.
There are just lots of wrecks, steamships, paddle ships, schooners. Have we found any treasure? No, but there is a lot of treasure out there. I've certainly found odds and sods, ammunition, old taps, that type of thing. Lots of pottery we come across, lots of cutlery, lots of golf balls. I see so much. I'm very spoiled. Basically, when I go in, I see things that probably nobody else has seen. So it is a beautiful world. You will have to try it.
Part of living here.
It's becoming a way of life. Yeah. We're up here every day, round about 9:30, 10 o'clock. We stop up for an hour and a half, a couple of hours, go home, and come back up again about 3 or 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that's every day. The dogs love it. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, John and I are always over here, so is Brian. Yeah. I mean, normally we go in the field and we sit on the compost seat, you know, the last of the summer wine seat up there. But I'm Tom, by the way.
Tom and John.
Tom and John.
That's Brian.
Brian. Brian. Is it the three of you then?
Yeah.
So it's like last of the summer wine, isn't it? And you come up in all weathers, do you?
Yeah. Windy, rain, we stand in the woods if it's too heavy.
Yeah.
But the great thing is, as I said, a job.
Walk and drenched.
You know, I've lost 2 stone since we've had it. Only because out walking twice a day, and I just love it. But especially days like this, I think you can't beat it. Yeah. Well, yeah, the thing is, I mean,
it's certainly, I love, wears the shoes out people. As well.
I've always worked with people. And since we've been over here, even like us, you walk around with the dogs and you're not just talking about the weather. You're talking about things that concern you, that interest you. But again, you see, that it gets back to, as dog walkers, you're quite a close community. Because although you might not remember everybody's name.
Remember the dog's name.
Yeah. Everybody comes up and says, oh, is this Biggles? And who are you?
Walking, I was up there in the gun emplacement there, just looking over. It was twilight. And I saw the, what I thought was a black dog, obviously, walking along here very stealthily. And then there it became very evident it was a puma, and it just...
It walked right towards us. We were the other side of the fort gateway there. And as we walked towards the fort gateway, it actually came and walked towards us and just stopped. And you could see its big cat-like face, and it had a big long tail. And it was quite a young one, I think, because it wasn't that big.
Yeah.
And eventually it just looked at us, and I grabbed the dog, and I ran up onto the ramparts there, because it went to the left here, and looked through that aperture, and it walked away, and it just walked calmly away into the bushes there. We were very, very close, within maybe 20 yards.
Yeah.
And then a local builder's wife was in the far fort there, in the southern fort, about 4 days later, walking her dogs, and it was in there. And there it was, you know, and frightened her to death. But originally it had been seen in the woodland at Kingswear by the National Trust forester down there. And then it moved along the coast to a place called Sharkham Point, which is the next headland. And Jack Russell went running into the bushes, and it actually chased this Jack Russell out.
I think Barryhead's a bit separate because it's
almost like a different world.
Yeah, because it was a walk up to it. It's more like a place where you come for recreation. But a lot of people come here to be friendly with other people. Yeah, it's private, a bit private. All dark, no lighting, nobody lived up here. So. I had my first kiss in the fort. Oh, that takes me back.
Which fort? Where were you?
Northern Fort, yeah. Good one.
Up there.
In the guardhouse.
In the guardhouse. Oh.
Yes, it's very nice. Ooh. He was called Darren.
But my dad had been wounded in the war, and he didn't live very much longer after that, so my mum brought three boys up. Pretty hard times in those days. And this is one of the reasons why we were out and about collecting something to eat, which was the seagull's eggs, the rabbits, and sometimes they used to be shot, but used to snare them normally. And there was a place in Brixham where you used to be able to sell the rabbit skins. You probably know that. On the day that I did fall over the cliffs, I was with two other young lads. They were a bit older than me, and we were supposed to take it in turns to go down and get the eggs. But as I was the smallest and the youngest, I had to do more of it. And of course, that's when it all happened. Just on this last occasion, when it was my turn to go, it was a bit further than we'd normally risk ourselves. But and that's what happened. I slipped and tumbled down over the cliffs there. One of the lads got frightened and ran off, but one of them stayed with me and came down, and we managed to climb back up over the top, and we went into what was then a little holiday camp, to the reception of the holiday camp, and they got the ambulance and took me to Brixham Hospital, in a bit of a mess, obviously, because of all the broken eggs all over me. Luckily, I wasn't seriously hurt.
It's a little, it's like
a tiny arrowhead.
One.
That's
a
leaf-shaped
arrowhead.
They're Neolithic.
And you came for it.
You can see that it's broken, but you can see that the it's leaf shaped.
Oh, it's perfect.
That's why we're debating how what that would bring down, because it's a very full arrowhead projectile.
Maybe they did like the South American Indians and put horrible poison. You didn't want to put them with anybody. My nursemaid used to bring me up here because if you go up past Berryhead Farm, what used to be Berryhead Farm, the Anglo-American oil tanks were up there, and all the Nissen huts were there when the American forces came in for D-Day. And my nursemaid used to take me out in the pram and used to come back. I mean, she was young, and I suppose I was a pretty little kid, you know. They all had kids at home. And we used to get national dried milk and all sorts of chocolate sometimes, dried bananas and all sorts of things we couldn't get. It was a regular walk, and of course I thought it was wonderful, you know, it was all piled in the pram around me. In the big boat, you can see Berryhead Cliff it's a huge landmark, and it's in all the navigation books, you know, all the books say look out for Berryhead so you know where you are. So it's very important. And it looms up. It's really quite startling how sheer it is. And if you're coming round the headland in the boat, you've got to be really careful because the sea is, you know, the point makes it quite, the tides are ripple round there sometimes. But on a very, very calm day, I've paddled round in the canoes and get days where it's so calm that you could go around in a bathtub.
He is like a great, great, great nephew of the people that originally lived here, and it was James and Samuel Shrives, who came from the Midlands,
Northamptonshire.
With Reverend Light.
Abide with me, man.
Yeah. And they came and they established themselves. They lived up here on the two cottages. And Reverend Light was down there in the Berryhead house. And one of them was the coachman. And the other was a farm laborer. And one of their daughters was called Priscilla Shrives. And she went to work in the big house down there. And when she was down there, one day, she must have been quite bored or something. Anyways, on one of the wooden beams in the house, we found her name written. And I think it said 11 afterwards. And they have that beam down in the museum now. It's quite sweet. When she got older, she married the man who was one of the last people up at Berryhead, and he was the guard. He lived in the guardhouse. So Priscilla lived with him in the guardhouse, and she wrote poetry, and we have some of the poetry as well. So there we go. That's what Priscilla's like.
Sun goes.